Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Reverend Wright.
Right. And yeah. who is my pastor. He is a wonderful man. And I think that's an example of, he's a pastor of a large congregation in Chicago. And one of the interesting things that I discover in my journey to discover what my identity is and who my father is also discovering sort of my own faith, which is not necessarily a traditional faith. I don't come out of an institutionalized religious setting. You know, all the stories and songs of the church, the hope that is embodied in the church, the sense of liberation that is embodied in the historically African-American church is really something that moves me deeply, and I think is probably the main pillar around which a lot of inner cities communities are going to be built. And Reverend Wright, my pastor, who I speak about in a chapter in the book, I think represents the best of what the black church has to offer.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
I rest my case. If you want to elect a black liberation theologist to the White House, then good luck, because you will never have your country back again. Now, we didn't slap together these interviews to make Obama look bad. We are presenting Obama as he is, the real Obama, as opposed to the invented Obama. These interviews came from his 1995 interview when he was doing a book tour on his book. And he says, Reverend Wright is a wonderful man. And then he says that the hope embodied in the church, the sense of liberation in the church, liberation theology. Then he says, Reverend Wright represents the best of what the black church has to offer. Now, we've told you, we've tried to warn you that Obama is a, some have said, Afro-Leninist. That's a little too esoteric for most people to comprehend. Then you've heard the word socialist. That doesn't really apply to Obama. He's not a socialist, nor is he an Afro-Leninist. Obama is closer to a full-on liberation theology Marxist. He's much like a PLO member in the West Bank. Now, if you want a radical of this nature taking the reins of the United States of America, then you ought to have your head examined. I truly don't believe most Democrats understand how dangerous this man is. I did not invent these words. He spoke these words. Here is a man who's changed on virtually every position. Here is a man who's promised everything to everybody to the extent that even the ABC News teddy bears are now saying that they're now deconstructing Obama because they understand their careers are on the line. Guys at ABC News who were licking his boots until last week are now suddenly saying, wait a minute, we've been deluded. We've been duped. We better be careful here. So they're starting to say, Obama's new attack on those who don't want higher taxes is selfishness. Another author says that Obama doesn't really have the capacity to fulfill his promises, and he makes a list of all of the promises, and they're impossible to keep. So even the ABC News bears, the little tiny people who eat honey at night and tuck themselves in with dreams of better times, are marching toward a dark river, which leads us to the opening of the Savage Nation. On MichaelSavage.com, there's a great article by Wesley Pruden of the Washington Times called Marching Toward a Dark River, which you absolutely have to download, take home, read over the weekend, and share with 10 friends. Because if you don't know who you're electing, this will help you understand that you don't know who you're electing. And I'll read it to you. Wesley Pruden writes, since the Obama phenomenon has no precedent in American politics, we must look to folktales to understand it. How could a man with no record, no experience, no known convictions, and no known core beliefs so mesmerize the millions to turn themselves, their children, and their country over to a man armed only with neatly pressed pants, a good shoe shine, and a seductive voice? We don't even get the salesman's smile. The Pied Piper of Hyde Park is clearly the direct descendant of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, he writes. Both share the gift of what a fully credentialed psychology professor calls, quote, a unique ability to identify with children, close quote. The early Piper lured the children of Hamelin to their deaths in the river when the burghers refused to pay him for ridding their village of rats. Robert Browning tells the story, and you can read the poem yourself and read the article yourself. Understand that he is a spinner of fairy tales, and we do not know what he actually will do unless you want to really believe that when he says he believes in the liberation theology of Reverend Wright, who hates whites, who hates America, and wants to liberate America, then you have a real inkling of what might happen if this man takes over the country. That's the opening to the Savage Nation. That's the change you just might get. And don't say we didn't try to warn you. Now, I want to ask you about race in this election for a minute, since it's been raised by the illegitimate left over and over again. The illegitimate left has had the audacity to say that whites who don't vote for Obama are doing so because of his race. That's very intriguing, because if you reverse it, how do you explain that 96% of black people are voting for Obama? Is that based on race? And if it's true that it's based on race, well, could you call all the blacks who are voting him racist? That would be ludicrous to say that. A good percentage are voting for him because of his policies, but a large percentage are voting for him without knowing what his policies are just because he's black. Those are the black people. Now, what about the whites? You're telling me if 6% or 10% or 20% of whites don't vote for Obama, they're doing so because they're all stone Ku Klux Klan members? Of course not. But if you want to believe that any white who doesn't vote for Obama is a racist, then you really have to examine who you are. You are probably a deluded fool. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. There are other topics, but they're not worth talking about right now, other than marching toward a dark river. This man is leading America over the brink. And you have to read him. Even ABC News has written Obama Clause. Obama Clause. And that was written by somebody from ABC News. They're calling him Santa Claus or Obama Clause. And let's see what else we have. Pakistan police raid child wedding. For those of you who are, Islamophiles. We only hear of Islamophobes. But for those of you who are forced to be Islamophiles, please read the New York Post article about a wedding that was being arranged between a 7-year-old boy and a 5-year-old girl in Pakistan and the arrest of the Muslim cleric officiating at the ceremony. Because if you like weddings between 7-year-olds and 5-year-olds, well, I suggest you get ready for more of them in America if the Islamists continue to muzzle the American press. Here's a sad story. Cars stopped to permit mother bear to pull her dead cub off highway. Very touching. In Asheville, North Carolina, police halted traffic on I-26 to help a mother bear get to her cub after it was struck and killed by a vehicle. You hear this? The bear has a better sense of motherhood than most of the club sluts in the United States of America who, if they give birth to a fetus, throw it in a trash bin so they can go back to partying afterwards. Another little article on michaelsavage.com. Let's see. Obama's new attack on voters who don't want higher taxes was selfish. We are selfish if we don't want to give more of what we earn to the people who don't deserve it because it's not their money to take. Murtha, here's the only good news. Murtha scrambles to save seat. Thank God the loudmouth who said that residents of his own home base, Pennsylvania, were racist might actually lose to a real war hero, as opposed to himself, who's nothing but an usher. 1-800-449-8255. Books are shipping only a few. I tell you the truth, I don't even want to talk about the book. I love it so much. So what I'll tell you is we'll talk about the book. Schwarzenegger is stumping for McCain. Oh, two of a feather. Let's hear him right now. Go ahead.
Your daily life, who would you want in that cell with you?
Yeah. man.
Please.
You want a man of eloquence or a man of proven
courage? Turn him off.
Courage.
That's it. Please. They even dug up Arnold to promote McCain. Two rhinos. What do you call two rhinos campaigning together? I'll be right back to tell you on the Savage Nation. Savage. Okay, so although Obama has lied on virtually every point, the Pied Piper of Hyde Park continues to attract the masses, and they are following him like lemmings over a cliff, is what many people are starting to notice. Humorless, self-righteous, and immensely proud of himself, he employs his gift of a unique ability to identify with children, to lure the grown-up children. Polite questions are verboten. Americans who look like grown-ups swoon like pimpled teenagers at the mention of his name and brook no criticism, however mild or reasoned the reservations. Polite questions are verboten, as Joe the Plumber learns. Scholars will write about this weird delirium in decades to come. The fanatics are particularly unhinged by inquiries into Mr. Obama's Chicago past and what his associations on the South Side and in the intellectual warrens of Hyde Park say about who he really is, the beliefs he holds dearest, if any, and how his, quote, palling around with shady characters has eroded respect for his judgment. Read the article. It's worth reading. Don't say we didn't warn you. Here's a man who said that he disavowed Reverend Wright, but in 1995 he said he was a wonderful man and he believes in his liberation theology and that Reverend Wright represents the best of what the black church has to offer. Don't say we didn't warn you. Don't call me up in 2 weeks and tell me you have buyer's remorse. 1-800-449-8255, Savage Nation, michaelsavage.com website, callers lined up around the block. San Diego, Arjan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's truly an honor to speak with you. I want to let you know off the start that I am a senior in high school here in San Diego, and I am an independent conservative because of you. The reason I wanted to call...
You better not let that get out, Arjan, because you're liable to be arrested by your high school and put into some kind of re-education camp.
You know, Savage, Dr. Savage, that's true. It's already happening. But you know what? I've brought the Savage Nation, the enemy within, liberalism is a mental disorder, to school multiple times. I get glares from people, but I just give them a smug look back and continue reading the truth that you say. And
they haven't torn the book out of your hands and reported you to the police?
Not yet. I don't know. There was a black van outside my home last night. It said Pelosi Patrol, so I guess.
Very funny. So what makes you call today, Arjan?
Two quick things. One, I just got in the mail a copy of Psychological Nudity, the autographed edition. This is my prized possession right now. I've gone through most of the book, and if I can say really quickly, I know it's a touchy subject for you, but on the story, My Silent Brother, the one line, he was the Jesus of my family who died for my sins. Of having listened to you for about 2.5 years right now, that one line truly showed me the character and the morals and the true, honest soul that you have, Dr. Savage, and it really reminded me and put everything into perspective that you truly are an honorable man. So
What can you say? You know, it's all been written and said. I mean, you know, how do you explain why God does this to certain people and not to others? Who did he ever hurt? Did he ever hurt that he should have been cursed like that?
And the doctors who basically outright lied to your family, you know, that those doctors are still around today, and that's, you know, I understand.
Well, they're still lying to children today. They're putting them on Ritalin. They're putting adults on drugs they don't need. They're poisoning people with medications that are unwarranted simply for greed and profit. It's still going on. It's still going on. But I've been trying to write about these things since 1980, 81, 82. I've been ahead of my time in many fields, and I'm ahead of my time in politics. It's just that some Americans know where we're going. Most people are deluded by the Pied Piper of Hyde Park.
And
Arjan, I want to thank you for your call. I know you're going to amount to something very, very important in America. You're certainly one of the givers rather than one of the takers. Thank you so much for calling the Savage Nation. The time is 26 minutes after the hour on a Friday here on the Savage Nation. We are pregnant with expectation for Tuesday evening, which leads me to the next question for today's program. And I'm not doing this for effect. I know people calling me and emailing me. They're afraid of riots on Tuesday night. And they're saying, you know, are you prepared? And I don't know what they're thinking. But, you know, the more I thought about it, in San Francisco, I realized how the roles have been reversed. The police have been gelded by the socialist government under Eddie Tusum Newsom and the corrupt district attorney, in my opinion, who will not prosecute drug dealers, even if they're caught, saying that it's really not our business to prosecute them if they're underage and from another country. She wouldn't prosecute with a death penalty someone who actually shot in cold blood a cop, Kamala Harris. She's part of the old girl establishment put in place by Willie Brown. And the fact of the matter is, if there are riots in San Francisco, the police have become, in essence, the passive resistors in cities like San Francisco. The police have been taken hostage by the liberal professional class. And I don't think I'm the – I don't know if I'm the first one to observe that, but I'm like de Tocqueville looking in from the outside. But it's interesting to me that extremely liberal cities like San Francisco have such fanatic left-wing governments that the police are unable to do their job except in the most extreme cases. So that, for example, when gangs take over the streets on last Friday of every month, in this case, it's bicycle gangs. They're gangs of the snottiest punks you have ever seen. They ride around, block traffic, cause mayhem. Now, the police in any normal city should round them up, take their bicycles, and arrest them for 30 days. Instead, the police have been reduced to standing on the sidelines and protecting these gangbangers on bicycles from irate motorists. So I wonder what the police would be permitted to do if Obama maniacs went crazy Tuesday night and did wildings through the streets of San Francisco. I suppose they'll have to stand on the sidelines and protect the mobs. It's the Savage Nation Friday edition. It's Rock and Roll Friday. We didn't play any rock and roll. We didn't play any rock and roll. Well, get some ready anyway. People are wondering, oh, isn't that touching? Bobby Darin. Let's go down memory lane. Oh, please, not tonight. God, I'm just so bored of memory lane.
Somewhere waiting for me.
It's not that good. Turn it off. I'm not in the... You got to be in a certain mood. Shark skin. You need shark skin on the mind to enjoy that one. That's all I can say to you. Barbara, Modesto, California, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I have been called for jury duty about 7 times, and every time that I take one of your books with me into the jury room, I am excused.
I can't say anything other than to say I hope millions of liberals are listening to that call, because they may finally have found a reason to buy one of my books.
Right. I keep liberalism as a mental disorder on hand, so I can...
Well, if they actually brought psychological nudity, and, you know, because my picture is so prominently displayed with sunglasses and a dog in my hand, I'm positive that that would get them dismissed from jury duty so they can go out and continue their grifting.
One for the future, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's right. You need to have every tool at your disposal. Here's a fellow calling from South Carolina, Steve. He wants to talk about the Department of Justice that might exist under Obama. Steve, I can't wait to hear your fears. What do you fear the DOJ would be like under Obama?
Dr. Savage, I'm a police officer, and my colleagues share this concern. We've discussed it in depth as this election season's gone along. A Department of Justice under Barack Obama would destroy law enforcement in the United States. If you recall the Janet Reno Department of Justice, it's our fear that we would be intimidated from enforcing laws and be prosecuted for justifiable use of force and
things. Well, of course, Steve. Guys like you are not afraid to take down bad guys. I watch cops. I see what goes on the video cameras. I'm amazed at what you have to face out there on the roads. But all you'd have to do is this. All you have to do is come to San Francisco to get training by the SFPD as to how not to do your job, and you'll be ready to go back to South Carolina. You'll be trained to be a passive policeman rather than an active policeman. You'll be trained to become a passive resister rather than an active arrester. And then you'll know what it's like to live in an Obama America. It's already being practiced here under any Twosome Newsome, Steve.
Police officers respect and appreciate your support of law enforcement officers who have been prosecuted or accused unjustly for simply doing their jobs. We're trying to keep the public safe. Our hearts are in the right place. And
Steve, I know this. Steve, and you don't have to sell it to me. I know what's out there. I know that it were not for guys like you who have the guts and the brawn to fight off the evil, the true evil that exists just on the other side of reality, people would be suffering in a way they could never imagine. But because you keep the really evil at bay, they can live in their little bubbles of liberalism.
Well, we consider the defense attorneys who are liberal by nature to be evil, personally. That they'll go to any means to defend criminals and to use the political destruction against police officers. And
right. Well, I agree. I'm going to give you an example to show you where I'm coming from. Last night, a friend of mine called me from Oakland, California. As you know, there's a crime spree in Oakland. They have a black liberal mayor who has let crime get out of control in Oakland, and nobody will say anything. You've got people going into restaurants with strong-arm holdups, and nobody can do anything to stop them. Last week in Berkeley, California, a white guy, a real liberal white guy at that, by his own description, was talking to a neighbor. He heard a woman scream. He ran down the steps. It was his wife on the ground, at the back of her car, on the ground. She had just been maced, and his two little babies were strapped into the car. Standing over them were a certain couple of a certain particular orientation. Well, the liberal man didn't think. He ran after the guy. He tackled him. The guy pulled out a knife, at which point a passerby helped subdue the attacker. Now, what I said to my friend was, an evil defense attorney is going to twist the whole scene. And here's what an evil defense attorney is going to say. He's going to say this poor black man did not mace the white woman after hitting her over the head. He came upon the scene after she had been maced by a stranger. He was only trying to help her when the husband, who he didn't know was the husband, pursued him. He pulled out his knife to defend himself. He is the actual victim. My friend who's an attorney said how disgustingly sad and true that is, Michael. That's just what these verminous left-wing lawyers will do in court. Do you agree with that or not?
I do, and let me make one point there on that issue. We have seen juries, for some reason, become more and more susceptible to the tactics used by defense attorneys, and we're having a harder time getting convictions because the media portrays us as the bad guys.
Well, you live in a corridor where the drug dealers are coming through from Florida. You get an awful lot of increasingly violent Hispanic gang members. Is that true or false?
Oh, it's true. There's more Hispanics.
Right. That's another little secret that's being swept under the rug. But South Carolina is in the drug corridor that runs right from the south up until the north. It's the reverse of the Underground Railroad. It's the overground drug railroad right now, and it runs right through your state. You guys will stop a guy in a traffic violation. You'll have him open the trunk. The next thing you know, you're on the ground grappling for your life. I've seen it over and over again. But what do they claim, racism every time you do it?
Yeah, racism, and there's just a political atmosphere that's very anti-cop all across America. And we've even seen signs of the Mexican Mafia, MS-13. It's getting worse as far as the Latino gangs go, and it's getting far worse when it comes to prosecution of these, violent...
Well, let me tell you something. The police are respected in the Savage Nation, Steve. We respect the police in the Savage Nation. We always have, with rare exception. And I've tried to help cops who get unjustly accused. And I've tried to help families who lose husbands or sons or fathers to these evildoers the best I can, Steve. So The best we can do is be your friend here on the radio. Thank you for the call. Now you know why Nancy Pelosi wants Michael Savage off the radio. You understand that? You know which way the wind blows, don't you? Because I do. All right, let's move on. New York City, Mike, WOR, policeman in the streets of New York. Mike, what are you calling about?
Yes, Michael. I can't say what precinct I do belong to, but we are preparing for riots that may occur after this election.
Now, are you told that you have to subdue the rioters or aid them in their vandalism and perhaps help them to the goods in the store?
No.
Because in San Francisco, the mayor is probably giving out notice that the police should aid the protesters because they won't be considered rioters in San Francisco. They'd be considered expressing pent-up rage from years of oppression by the whites. And although most of the agitators will be whites themselves, they won't be white for the day. They'll be in solidarity with their brothers. And if they want to trash a store and rob materiel, take things from the store, I'm sure that any Tucson Newsom would encourage that as a way of letting them vent their hostility and the frustration from the years of oppression in an oppressive, racist, white society. But you mean your mayor hasn't given you those instructions, Mike?
No, he hasn't, Mike. We have the union trying to force us to vote one way, but we're all going to vote.
Let me ask you, what are you using over your mouthpiece, a handkerchief or a cup?
No, nothing.
It's amazing. It sounds Look, Mike, it's no laughing matter. I use satire, sarcasm, whatever I have to use on this show. But San Francisco once had one of the best police departments in the country, and I meet these guys. They're as tough as anybody. They're as good as anybody. But because of the infection of liberalism, the department has the lowest morale in history now, Mike. They have who is your police chief in New York?
We're all right over here. I'm actually on the island. I don't want to go into what precinct.
Okay, I understand. All right, I won't say it. Because here we have a female police chief, about 5'1". They're still searching for a hat small enough to fit on her head. And apparently she cannot use a pistol. She hasn't qualified for several years. But that doesn't deter her from riding in Columbus Day parades with another female friend right beside her, with whole brigades of gay women and lesbian men in the police force. And as you well know, that's why we have some of the lowest crime rates in China right now in San Francisco. You know, China has low crime rates as well because they don't report crime in China as they don't in San Francisco. I don't know if you're aware of it, but 40% of all felonies go unreported in San Francisco under direct orders from the mayor's office, according to what I've heard, in order to make the crime rate look lower. That's why we have a low crime rate. Now, we can't hide the murders, the homicide epidemic in San Francisco, because they can't write that off or sweep it under the rug. They just pick up the dead bodies and cart them off to the hospital or the morgue. But most San Franciscans are like the story in the Pied Piper. They choose to look the other way and hope for a better day. What they don't understand is tomorrow may not be a better day. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, the long American nightmare will be over Tuesday night, one way or the other. When I say the nightmare, I mean the nightmare of the most expensive, depressing election in American history. It's unprecedented in so many ways that I truly can't, let us say, summarize them. This is a phenomenon, as Wesley Pruden has written, that has no precedent in American politics. He asks, how could a man with no record, no experience, no known convictions, and no known core beliefs so mesmerize the millions to turn themselves, their children, and the country over to a man armed only with neatly pressed pants, a good shoe shine, and a seductive voice? The Pied Piper of Hyde Park, he writes, is clearly the direct descendant of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I suppose the race-conscious libs are looking for racism in that, but they'll have a hard time figuring it out because there is no racism in that. In other words, you can detest Obama's socialist policies and not be a racist. Of course you can if you have guts and stand up to them, for God's sakes. Just look them in the eye and tell them, I don't like the man's policies. I don't care about his skin color. He's not too black. He's too green. Say that to them. Joe, New York. Actually, you could say he's not too black. He's too red. Joe in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi.
I'm looking forward to reading your book. I've been hearing the vignettes. I, too, grew up in the Bronx in the 50s and 60s in St. Philip's Parish at the end of the concourse. I presently live in Woodbury, Long Island. Tell me what I'm missing. The vast majority of my neighbors are Jewish, of Jewish descent. There is a war against the Jews brewing internationally. I live in, a very affluent place. Doctors, attorneys, everybody is taxed to death. 90% of my neighbors have Obama placards on their lawns. Tell me, what am I missing? I mean, this masochism of affluent Jews on Long Island, I cannot, it's in my head spin.
I think the operational word here is guilt. 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 They're guilty for their own success. And they want to be punished for it. It's a sort of sadomasochistic desire to be punished by Obama for the sins they didn't commit. I don't know how else to put it. I don't understand the psychosis of liberalism. I've written a book on liberalism as a mental disorder. But if you actually analyze why they're that way, it's very complicated, Joe. Why would they want to pay higher taxes? Why would they want fewer rights? Why would they want free speech throttled? Why would they want Israel's security threatened by a man who was associated with Arab terrorists and those who were fellow travelers with the PLO? Have you asked them any of that?
This footsie with destruction. I mean, my mind reels. I mean,
there was a man around many years ago who was in some ways a very brave man and kind of a foolish man. His name was Irv Rubin. He was the head of the Jewish Defense League. I never met Irv, but he was a brave guy. And he once went on television and he said, "What is wrong with my people? They're so brilliant when it comes to business. They're so brilliant when it comes to science or medicine or the law, but they're such utter fools when it comes to self-preservation." Does that summarize it for you?
That does. Thank you. And if I may make one more remark, I've discovered you about 6 months ago. I've been listening to all the other, the Leprechauns, the Rush, blah, 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 from in the WOR here in New York. I mean, markets find their demographics. The commercials that support your show are absolutely, you know, they're alive, energetic, intellectually curious. The supporters who are buying time for your air. Compared to Rush and O'Reilly, it's all, you know, it's above ground internment, painkillers, lawyers.
Wait, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about other guys' advertisers, but I do appreciate it. Joe, do you have a copy yet of Psychological Nudity?
No, I don't.
Well, you do now. You do now, Joe, because you're such a good new caller to the Savage Nation. If you'll stay on the line, we will have a new copy sent out to you shortly. And what I suggest you do is bring it to one of your neighbor's houses for a celebration in the near future with my picture on the front cover, if you really want to upset them. Joe, 1-800-449-8255 is the Savage Nation. Well, my dog right now, Teddy, who's very famous. I think Teddy is the most famous dog in America right now. The 11-pound, he's maybe 12 pounds now because I can't help it. I overfeed my dogs. Is coming out of anesthesia as we speak because he had to have his gums cleaned or something like that. What have I heard of this? I don't know what this cost me. Blood work, anesthesia, dog cleaning. In my day, I mean, we liked our dogs. We didn't love them. We liked them. We were fond of them. And when they died, we threw them in a garbage truck. Now, I know things have changed. It's a kind of gentler America. I wouldn't throw Teddy in a garbage truck. I understand it. They have crypts now, and they cry with coffins. Is there no some balance in America? I don't know if I can go that far. I don't know about this teeth cleaning. I spend more money cleaning his teeth than I do mine. I avoid dentists like the plague. I'm missing a few teeth because of it, I'll admit it. Because I don't know what it is. Every time I go to the dentist, I come back with a cold. I don't care what time of year it is. No matter how healthy I was when I went in, I come out coughing, sneezing, a deep sore throat. Well, whatever. So I can't wait to see Teddy's poor kid is doped up now, the dog. The other one, Snowy, is ashes in a box in the living room. I still don't believe it's true. I keep a picture of her pasted to the top of the box. She was a little sheltie. I still remember her jumping over like Lassie when the kids were young. Yeah, Shell. Then in a box, then you see yourself. Forget it. Don't even think. Most of us don't realize that we're mortal. We just don't. We just don't. My what age does it occur when you really realize you're mortal? Does anyone really accept the fact of the, accept their own mortality? When? They say teenagers think they're immortal. That's why they make good soldiers. You know, that's why in some of the Muslim countries, their soldiers are 12, 13 with AK-47s. And some of them, of course, no matter what the age is, they think that there's an actual heaven with 72 virgins to just show you what we're facing here. But that's a separate story that we're not allowed to mention anymore. Apparently, that's not legal anymore to mention that there's an Islamofascism around the world brewing and that certain ethnic groups are in their target and in their sights. Not allowed to mention that because you might offend somebody. What would you like to talk about? Because I could go in either direction. Now, I understand that Obama palled around with Rashid Khalidi, who was a spokesmouth for the PLO. And, of course, the LA Times is hiding that videotape. Rashid Khalidi was trapped by a Fox News reporter, Griff Jenkins. And here is Griff Jenkins confronting Rashid Khalidi in clip 17.
Professor Khalidi?
Hi.
Griff Jenkins of Fox. Can I ask you a quick question?
You just came on asking
me. Could you just tell me, what's your relationship with Senator Obama? So we can clarify it, sir? I apologize for interrupting, but you become the centerpiece of the election.
You can get
Will you at least call for the LA Times to release the video? What was said? What was said at that speech? Will you talk to us?
I will not.
Were you the spokesman for the PLO? We confirm that? Okay. You're at the center of the election, sir. Just some quick clarifications and we'll leave. Okay.
Good for him. Now, here's a real Fox reporter. This is not a leprechaun. This is a true reporter. This is a man who doesn't pretend to be in the middle and fair. This is a man who's a real investigative journalist. Griff Jenkins, you're my kind of guy. Don't tell anybody. You're liable to get fired. But apparently Rashid Khalidi, spokesmouth, allegedly a spokesmouth for PLO, good friend of your good friend Barack Hussein Obama, fled into an elevator after Fox News reporter Griff Jenkins confronted him about the mysterious LA Times tape that the good journalists at the LA Times won't release. The journalists at the LA Times. The journalists at the LA Times. The Society of Professional Journalists.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America that's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
You know, all the stories and songs of the church, the hope that is embodied in the church, the sense of liberation that is embodied in the historically African American church is really something that moves me deeply, and I think is probably the main pillar around which a lot of inner cities communities are going to be built. And Reverend Wright, my pastor, who I speak about in a chapter in the book, I think represents the best of what the black church has to offer.
Beware the Marxist lawyers. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You are electing an outright naked corrupt Marxist on top of it all from Chicago's back wards. And many of you think that he's the Pied Piper who is going to, I guess give you everything, a chicken in every pot, as they used to say. And I reversed it to a pot in every chicken. And I have no doubt that Obama will give pot to every chicken. There's no question about that. With a little help from his friends in the Society of Professional Journalists, I'm sure there'll be pot for every chicken, because there's an awful lot of journalists out there who are going to be looking for work. And I suppose he could employ most of the journalists after they're fired from the newspapers that they ran into the ground. Barack Hussein Obama lays plans to deaden expectation after election, says Times Online. Victory. If he wins, Barack's senior advisors have drawn up plans to lower expectations for his presidency if he wins next week, amid concerns that many of his euphoric supporters are harboring unrealistic hopes of what he can achieve. No kidding. Well, I know how it's going to run. If he should win, God forbid, he's going to say that it'll be the evil Republicans who prevented him from doing his, and the selfish whites who prevented him from enacting his hopes and his dreams. That if only those evil Republicans could be all, well, let's say eliminated in some way or another, and we could only have a smooth, clean, one-party government along the style of the Castro brothers in Cuba, for example, as a model that he may like. And if only those evil whites were not so selfish, all of us could have more hopes and more dreams. No, you know, see, the Soviet Union, as you well know, was a nightmare, a police state, a hellhole, re-education, slave labor camps, one salami in a butcher store, one bread in a bakery. Yet the communists, both in the Soviet Union and abroad, even in our own country, never claimed that it was the Soviet economic system that caused it. They always claimed it was the result of the evil capitalists who prevented the Soviet system from realizing its full potential. Just as they always explain away socialism, the failure that it is, under the guise that it's the capitalist system that's preventing it from experiencing its true merits. That's what they're going to do in this case. They're going to say, if it wasn't for the selfish whites and the evil Republicans, there really could be hope in America. So we're working on that right away to make sure it's a one-party system as fast as possible. Well, that's what's going to happen anyway. I don't know. The old guy might win. Then we'll have our problems anyway, as you well know. I mean, if McCain wins, he's going to inherit a Democratic-controlled Congress anyway. And then what? Then we might have a benefit of a 60-seat filibuster-proof supermajority of Democrats, but at least we'll have a split government. But as you well know, McCain is a compromiser, so we're going to have a big job on our hands either way. As independents, whichever of these characters wins, we have a big job. With Obama, we may not be able to do our job because many of our freedoms will be curtailed. Make no mistake about it, he has said so. His minions have said so. McCain is a more benign sort of doofus, who I certainly don't think McCain would enact the so-called fairness doctrine. I don't think he would do that, but I don't really know. God only knows what McCain is capable of. Immigration, illegal aliens. I believe both of them see eye to eye on granting amnesty to the illegals, but we the people are going to stop them. We're going to do everything we can to stop them, because even Democrats in the state of California, by a large majority, want the illegal population diminished. Seriously diminished, because they understand we can't sustain them. And since liberals are into sustainability and sustainable societies, they recognize that a flood of people is not good for the environment unless they're on bicycles and they wear jester costumes. So there it is. Oh, am I glad it's Friday. My God, I don't know if I could take another second. How much more can we do with this? How much more will there be? Will there be anyone left in the media next Thursday is the question. I'll survive if I want to, because I was always doing stories and have a background in science, poetry, art, travel, you know. So for me, it's easy to tell stories that are real because I have an awful lot of experience. But I can always find conversational topics for myself because I'm a conversationalist. In that sense, there's an old phrase, Renaissance man, whatever that means. Well, I've lived through the Renaissance in my own life, and so it's not that not that hard for me. But look, let's not talk about that right now. Obama seeks landslide, but McCain claims momentum. If McCain has any momentum, it's due to several factors. One, me, because I endorsed him on Tuesday. His numbers went up Wednesday. Is that the only reason McCain has momentum? No. There are other reasons McCain is having momentum. The Khalidi tape. The fact that Obama's association with, let us say, really dangerous and questionable people is starting to hit people between the eyes. The fact that Obama is seen to be very, very empty of substance. The fact that Obama's purchase of time. Was it Thursday night or Wednesday night? I believe backfired on him. I believe that the commercials that he bought, the Obama commercials, backfired on him because, you know, the American people have a certain distaste for, I don't know, at a certain point, I think they have a distaste for phoniness. They have an S detector, and I think they're starting. It's starting to go off with Obama. And it could be that they may take the slow plodding turtle over the hare. So those are some of the factors as to why McCain may be having some momentum. The problem is vote fraud on the side of the Democrats. They've registered people who are not citizens. They've registered illegal aliens, as I said, felons. They've registered people through Acorn that don't exist. And if you think I'm making this up, how would you explain the following? There are more registered voters in Mississippi right now than there are adults in the state of Mississippi. How do you explain that? Other than vote fraud by the Democrat Party. Here's another one. Al Gore went to Florida to help boost Obama, which I think is a scream. Al Gore is probably the least reputable man in the history of American politics. He pushed forward the fraud of man-induced global warming. They're holding global warming hearings in the parliament in London while they have the first snowstorm since 1922. And they don't even look out the window and see what they're doing, these idiots. So Al Gore no longer has the grip of America that he once had. But look, the people down there who are the grifters of New York, who live in Florida part-time and vote in at least three different places, the Catskills, Brooklyn, the Bronx, and Florida, of course they like a guy like Al Gore. And you know why? Well, I think I'm going to have to play for you the 2000 Lexus Liberals from my new book, Psychological Nudity. Could you play that for them, please, if you have it ready? If not, well, we'll wait. Yeah, no, it's a good piece. It's worth playing. And while you're doing it, I'll pump iron. I have two dumbbells here that I'll use.
38 states said yes to Bush. 12 states said yes to Gore. Are some states more equal than other states? South Florida, for example. The land of the New York Communistic Front. The millionaires grifting off the welfare state. Pretending to each other the moral indignation of the downtrodden. Acting with heads held high and jaws thrust out as victims of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. Lexus liberals with Volkswagens on their brains. Condo commies. Lunchroom Lenins. Stand-up Stalins. Miserable Maos. Pathetic Pol Pot Marxists using black street gangs as their body armor. Stealing ballots. Grifting SSI. Faking disabilities. Voting for Al Gore. All in a day's work. South Florida. The land of sunshine. Schmoozing. And now stupidity. The whole world now knows New York Communist Democrats are too stupid to vote straight, but smart enough to twist the truth when their benefits are threatened. South Florida, the land of suntan Trotskys and delis, bypassed Bolsheviks and Buicks, air-conditioned Chays and condos, loud, lewd losers in limbo, stuck between their investments and their liberalism, lost to their religion, fervent in their non-belief, save the DNC, their new religion, corned beef commies, buffet Bolshies, jogging jokesters stuck in Camelot fantasies, Kennedy their last idol, a drunk, profligate warmonger covered for by his beautiful wife, Hillary, their personal Evita Peron, Bill their shameless shagots, Tipper their tipsy donut, Al their Shabbos goy, South Florida, the land of sun and SOBs.
Savage.
Eddie, my love.
Will be Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Eddie,
what a country. Whoever thought we'd have a communist revolution in our lifetime? Whoever thought that the revolution would come from the left, not from the right? I did. See, I told you 15 years ago that the left would destroy the right faster than the right would destroy the left. And you may say, well, how did that happen? You have 16 years of Clinton, Bush, both of whom are internationalists. They have no loyalty to America, in my opinion. No loyalty to a party in particular. They have a loyalty only to the New World Order. They destroyed the conservative movement after destroying the right wing. First, they came for the right wing, and they did it under Clinton. If you remember, they destroyed the militias. Then they destroyed, I guess, very dangerous people at the compound in Waco, Texas. They were real dangerous. They were men, women, and children, and 78 of them were burned to a crisp. And thus far, not one ATF agent or FBI agent nor Janet Reno has gone to prison for the deaths of 78 people. So after they got away with killing innocent people, the people in this country became terrified of this government. Then along came George Bush, who killed an entire nation called Iraq and got away with that. And the people are now in a state of hysteria because they don't understand which way to turn. So many of them are reaching out to this guy, this fraud from Chicago named Obama, who's a naked Marxist. And the others are now clinging to the old repeat of history number three, John McCain, because they, at least they know on a national security level, they feel they can trust him. After all, he is an American war veteran. He is a former Navy pilot. He did suffer in Hanoi, in the Hanoi Hilton. He was tortured mercilessly by the Vietnamese. So, you know, you got to bank on a guy like that when it comes to patriotism. Obama is not patriotic, incidentally. May I say what I truly believe to be so and apparent to me? Would you call it patriotic to be in a church for 20 years where the preacher hates the country, hates whites, and calls the country every name under the sun? Would you call it patriotic to elect a man who says he believes in black liberation theology? That's what you consider to be patriotism? No. That's not patriotism. That's something other than patriotism. That's revolutionary Marxism. So if you don't understand what you're electing here, you're going to pay the penalty for it. Don't you understand that? You may hate Republicans. You may even hate the white male. But what you don't understand is the system in which you are living gives you the freedom to even hate politicians, while Marxism does not permit you the freedom to hate politicians. But that's way beyond your pay scale for most of you. I understand that. Tampa, Florida. Debbie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael. I want to thank you. I'm a brand new listener. And are you there?
Go.
Wait a minute. No, don't.
No, you got to talk. Look, Debbie, I'm different than any of the hosts. I don't really talk to callers. Don't ask me how I am. Don't ask me if I'm here. Please tell me what you called about.
Okay, I'm sorry. My father was a racist my whole life. My father is 75 years old. I am 52 years old. I have never been prejudiced my entire life. I am white. I'm a Christian woman. It is driving me crazy what these people are trying to do to our country. They are trying to explode it.
Who are these people?
Media.
The Society of Professional Journalists?
Yes, they want
to. The journalists are trying to do it.
Yes, they are scaring people to death by telling them that there's going to be riots. I always thought my whole life that black people and white people were equal. You know what? I would see a black person on the street. I would walk down. I would think that we were the same. I never knew that black people, quote, hated me. I never knew that in churches that there were all kinds of racist things being said. I always loved black people. I thought we were equal. And now the media is trying to tell me that if I don't vote a certain way that I'm a racist, they are going to raise racism in this country to a level that is unheard of. There are white people.
Well, you got to understand that there are operational Marxists in the journalism profession whose entire goal is to bring it all down, man. They have tried to foment race riots in this country for over 50 years by pitting one race against another. And in this case, they're doing a very good job of it. How dare they say that if you don't like Obama, you're a racist? I mean, I don't like his Marxist politics, period. End of story. And make no mistake about it, his writings are Marxist. His speeches are Marxist. Well, of course, today they've rewritten his story. But if you listen to what he actually said before he was on the national scene, you cannot describe it as anything except Marxist. And racist, by the way.
90, and you know what? It drives.
I don't want to even talk about it anymore. I'm in a sweat. My temperature went up from the show already. It's enough. What else do you want to talk about here on the Savage Nation? I'm weary. I'm like a refugee from America, what's going on, what they did to my country in the last few months. What the media, as I call the society professional journalists, has done to this country over the last year is something unseen in American history. They're like melamine in the food supply.
Savage.
You know, at one time, colleges were the pinnacle of higher education. People sent their kids to college to become not only better educated, but hopefully better citizens as well. Now, if you look at what the colleges and universities pass off for degrees and curriculum, it makes you wonder how the higher education system became so tainted by the so-called liberal arts. Our next guest is Roger Kimball, whose book, Tenured Radicals, is in its third edition and exposes what's going on in our college system and who is behind it. Roger Kimball, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you.
What was your main idea behind this book?
Well, Tenured Radicals was first published way back in 1990, and the aim was to bring to the attention of the public what had gone wrong in the teaching of the humanities and liberal arts in our colleges and universities. After all, parents were spending all of this money to get their children educated, and they found that actually what was going on was it was more like they were more like factories for a certain kind of political indoctrination. You know, time was that you would go to a college or university in order to become educated and become a better citizen. But increasingly, since the 1960s, colleges have become largely factories for the indoctrination of a certain left-wing political ideology. And it was my, my perception that many people didn't really understand this. They thought that colleges and universities were still the same good old institutions they've always been. And of course, you know, there are a few freaks here and there, but basically, you know, we were over the 1960s and things were back to normal. But that's not what happened at all. You know, in the 60s and the 70s, the radicals were on the outside. They were manning the barricades. But what happened is they didn't go away. They got tenure, and they became professors and deans and provosts and college presidents. And the left-wing, activist, anti-American ideology that had been on the outside in the 1960s was now working its way through the institutions inside the universities and helping to raise the consciousness of a whole generation of students and future teachers. And it was my idea that many people didn't quite understand this, and Tenured Radicals was an effort to bring this to the public's attention. And I have watched what's happened over the last decade and a half, and much to my surprise, there really hasn't been that much change among the professoriate, among the teachers, partly because of the institution of tenure, which is a kind of self-perpetuating virus. They appoint each other, they promote each other, they tenure each other, and so what happens is you get a very left-wing ideology that just kind of keeps getting passed down. Now, the student body has changed quite a bit, I think, over the last decade and a half, but the teachers really haven't, and so I decided it was time to update the book with a long new introduction, and I updated various other things in it to try to make it a pertinent document for what's going on today.
How did it get to this point?
The brief answer to that question, it's not a complete answer, but I think it's an accurate answer, is the 1960s, that assault on the fabric of American society, on traditional ways of behaving, that assault on traditional ways of understanding art and culture and the purpose of a university and a college education. All of those radical ideas that were formulated in the late 1960s and became such a prominent part of American society in the 1970s and 80s crystallized, really, I think, in that intellectual milieu of the universities. It's no accident, as the Marxists used to say, that characters like Bill Ayers, who has been getting so much ink recently, it's no accident that he had turned to the university to complete his radical designs that he had, you know, once upon a time tried to put forward by bombing things. Now, instead of bombing things, he's engaged in a radical educational activity. I mean, to describe William Ayers as an educational reformer, as the New York Times recently did, is kind of like calling Joe Stalin an agricultural reformer. I mean, Ayers is just as radical today as he was when he was bombing the Capitol and other places around the country. It's just that now he has taken his incendiary devices into the university and is as it were detonating mines rather than bombs.
What are these schools passing off as education?
Well, the colleges and universities today, you can't step foot in an institution of higher education today without finding somewhere a big plaque proclaiming their commitment to diversity. But you scratch that and you find out that what they mean by diversity is strict intellectual conformity on any contentious subject, and that that the party line is always the so-called progressive left-wing line. Universities, especially in the liberal arts, have become hostage almost entirely to the imperatives of political correctness and multiculturalism. To the extent that the classics are still being taught, they're often being taught as a kind of menu of oppression studies. You read Shakespeare not in order to understand Shakespeare and what he had to say, but rather to learn about, you know, the oppression of natives in the Tempest, let's say, or the oppression of women in King Lear or something. So it's what you find is rather than being institutions devoted to the preservation and the transmission of knowledge, they're used as institutions to further a kind of cultural revolution.
Well, what's the relationship between the media, Hollywood, and the universities?
Well, I think that the media, certainly, and to a somewhat lesser extent, but to an increasing extent, Hollywood, especially the Hollywood writers, are products of the university. So it's not surprising that they espouse the same left-wing, anti-American, progressive ideology. I mean, you know, the media, at least the so-called mainstream media, you know, represented by the New York Times and the network channels and so on, CNN, to an extraordinary extent, simply reflect the radical ethos of the university. And I think we see it, to an extraordinary extent, playing itself out in this election. Here you have the Harvard-educated elite candidate Barack Obama, on the one hand, and against, you know, a very different sort of character, a kind of career military man and a working woman. And the contrast could not be clearer. I think it's a contrast between someone whose patriotism is expressed in things like, I'm a citizen of the world, and someone whose patriotism was expressed, you know, by serving his country for many years in the military. One represents the elite educational culture of Harvard, a Yale, a Princeton, and so on. The other represents something much older and much simpler, I think.
Is the system changing at all? Is there something we can do?
There are many, many initiatives. You know, ever since Alan Bloom wrote his book, The Closing of the American Mind, back in 1987, people have been very aware that something has gone very wrong in the universities. And it was my purpose in writing Tenured Radicals to give, you know, chapter and verse citations of how this poison had entered the bloodstream of the teaching of the liberal arts. That's why it's a very polemical book. It it tackles, you know, particular professors, particular departments, particular disciplines, and tries to show how they have really reneged on their their contract with the future to educate in a dispassionate way the next generation of students. As for bright lights, there are bright spots here and there. I think, for example, of the Madison program at Princeton University. There are initiatives at the University of Texas at Brown, but they're tiny. You know, they represent a small percentage of, a tiny part of 1% of what's actually going on in most colleges and universities. So that they're laudable, but I don't know that they're making a huge difference. And part of the problem is that universities over the last couple of decades have become so incredibly rich. You know, there are small colleges, for example, like Hamilton College, that was the site of the Ward Churchill episode a year or so ago. They were going to invite Ward Churchill to come and participate in the college life there. And here's someone who, referred to the people who worked in the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns. He compared the people in the World Trade Center to Nazis, in other words. And there's a huge outcry. He finally didn't go to Hamilton, but when you look at Hamilton College, you find that it's an institution with an endowment approaching $1 billion, or at least it was until last month anyway. And all that money does is it effectively insulates colleges and universities from public accountability. And I think it's going to be very difficult to change the academic culture until we find some way of making them accountable to the public. As it is now, they really are sort of free agents that are sort of go their own way and are far from furthering the American dream. They are all about questioning and sort of tearing down the idea of America.
Roger Kimball, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's been great to speak with you today. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Savage.
So the newspapers are losing readership in droves. They're going bankrupt, and yet they don't change what they're doing. They don't change what they're doing. Editors across the nation, by and large, 99% far-left radicals, slavishly worshiping Obama. The readers are turning off from the papers. They don't want any more of this worship. They want journalism of some sort. They're not getting it, so they're not buying the plain dealer. They're not buying the Chronicle. They're not buying the New York Times. They're not buying these papers. And yet editors like Susan Goldberg, for example, of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, who, in my opinion, first destroyed the San Jose Mercury News, then is hired by the Cleveland Plain Dealer and now fires an orchestra reviewer because he criticized the orchestra conductor, is an example of everything wrong with the United States of America's journalism profession. Not journalism, journalism. And here we are facing a Marxist with black liberation theology inside his head about to seize the keys to this nation. And we have white people being dragged over the cliff, not even knowing what they're electing here. All they know is that it's a Pied Piper that they seem to like. You could also blame George Bush for it if you wish. There's certainly truth to that one. I mean, the man wrecked the economy, dragged us into a war that he wouldn't win. And the people are reacting as much to Iraq and the economy as they are to Obama. They may not love Obama, but they're saying anything but more of this Republican thievery. I understand that. I can understand that. But be careful which way you're going here. Other extremists have come along in troubling times in nations, and the nations have been destroyed by these extremists. And I don't have to give you a list. I think you know who they are. And make no mistake about it, Obama is an extremist by any definition. What would you call black liberation theology other than extremism? What would you call a man who sat in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years and said that he was a wonderful pastor until people found out what he was saying? I want to give away one copy, by the way, of Psychological Nudity before today's hour is over on the Savage Nation. Las Vegas, Michael, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please. Michael, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael Savage, it's me, yeah?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, listen, I'm going to say what I want to say, really short and sweet. I don't mean to offend anybody listening in. I'm not an American, but I'm originally from Australia and New Zealand. So, and I just want to say I talk for all Australians. We are 100% behind the McCain campaign and the American people. And personally, to be honest with you, I'm horrified to see Barack Obama elected president of the United States. At least we've got his birth certificate issue coming up. Now, any American who has really got any mental savvy should definitely not vote for Obama. And as I said, I don't mean to step on anybody.
Well, give me three reasons why not to vote for Obama. Just make them simple. One, two, three. I'll give them for you. One, birth certificate is questionable. He may not be an American citizen. Two, he sat in the church that hated America for 20 years. Three, he espoused black liberation theology until recently. Thank you for the call. We've been through this up and down, over and around. And anyone who understands what reality is understands this. Utah Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. If a President Obama, backed by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, were to decide to grant amnesty to the nearly 30 million illegals in this country, they would virtually destroy the two-party system of a political party system here, thus creating a power base for a Democrat Party and the left that could last forever and destroy the conservatives.
Well, I agree with you. Then why does John McCain want to grant amnesty to the illegals? Because he does. John McCain lobbied to grant amnesty to the illegals. Can you figure that one out?
I can't. They'll destroy our country.
Well, tell that to John McCain. How does he differ than Obama on granting amnesty to the illegals, which will grant a 20-year reign? Well, 20, it'll be – look, if you grant amnesty to 20 million illegals and then they become citizens and then they have the right to bring in their relatives, that means the demographics of America change forever. And that means there'll be a perennial underclass. That means there'll be a perennial left-wing socialist Democrat Party. Why would John McCain support that?
I have no idea how he could. And
You have no idea. That's why I opposed John McCain when he crafted the McCain-Kennedy bill. He has not changed his tune. That is why he has not gone on the Savage Nation, nor on the Rush Limbaugh show. Instead, that pathetic dunce spends more time on Saturday Night Live making a mockery of himself. And yet I reluctantly have to support him. That's how much I detest Obama's liberation theology. Thanks for the call. That's the trap that we're in right now. That is the trap we're in. And there it is. Vince in San Francisco, you're up on the Savage Nation.
If I could piggyback on the insightful Jewish caller you had in the previous hour, Michael, and your brilliant comment on liberal white guilt, if I could say that it's not just liberal white guilt, but it's white guilt plus white flight that is adding to the Obama juggernaut. The Jews and the Catholics were the immigrant class that built this country through the urban experience, you know, working up the Bowery, having their own businesses, going to school in New York and in Chicago and Boston and San Francisco. And then they fled. They went out to the burbs. And now, as they've moved up and their kids are lazy, their kids have everything, they have everything, and they no longer go to the temple for the Day of Atonement, I have sinned, or go to the parish and they confess on a weekly basis, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And you mentioned confession. They need to confess their sins, but they no longer have the temple or the parish. They're Jewish or Catholic in name only. And how do they confess their sins? By voting for Obama. It fits into their guilt, because if you don't get absolved...
Well, it's not so much a confession of sins as it is an expunging of their guilt. They feel that if they can elect this harlequin or this jester, they will have somehow gotten rid of some of their shame and their guilt for God knows what. Vince, I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for your excellent exposition here on the Savage Nation. Again, my Savage Radio stories are available. I suggest you grab a copy while you can at michaelsavage.com, because the book is not available in the bookstores and everybody loves it. Everyone who's gotten it loves it, and I want you to have a copy for the holidays. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Question for you. Do you fear riots in America on election night? I don't. I think there are going to be some crazies, but by and large, whether Obama wins or loses, I think there'll be small pockets of trouble, largely whipped up by white communists on bicycles. with black masks. The same troublemakers who trash McDonald's in Europe.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao. You ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
If you look at the victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court, I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And
all right, we got it. He's a naked Marxist, the first one in American history who has gotten this far. Make no mistake about it. We have socialists in Congress right now. Bernie Sanders from Vermont is a socialist. He's an overt socialist. And we have socialist wobblies in the U.S. Senate and the Congress who, you know, never come out and say it. None of them will say it. The fact of the matter is his rhetoric says it for him. Now, when I coined the phrase 2 weeks ago, trickle-up poverty, it was a clever derivative of redistribution of wealth, because that's what we're talking about. Now, you may say, well, what's wrong with taking from the rich and giving to the poor? How about everything? Everything is wrong with it for the following reason. Now, let me define my terms. If you said to me, take from the rich and give to the poor, I'd have you define the rich. Then I'd have to subdefine the rich, those who stole their money and those who earned their money. For example, the president of Lehman Brothers, who I saw before Congress about 4 weeks ago, should not only have his wealth redistributed, he should be put in prison, in my opinion, for having destroyed the company and robbed the shareholders blind. That's not redistribution of wealth. That's called justice. And we're all for that. But let's not confuse the robber barons of today with people who create jobs through hard work. And that's the problem. We have a perfect storm that has brewed between the excesses of the Bush administration in the form of the Lehman Brothers CEO, in form of the Morgan Stanley CEO, in my opinion, in the form of the Treasury Secretary himself, who is operating almost along the lines of a Don Corleone. We have real problems here with robber barons robbing the Treasury. Nobody's against seeing justice done to them. And nobody's opposing seeing them go to prison if they can be proven they committed a crime and having their assets seized. That is not redistribution of wealth. Redistributing wealth is something quite different. There was an article from the Charleston Watch, out of Charleston, South Carolina, I guess, by Lee Walton. And it's called Shrimp and Grits, Income Redistribution, a Fulfilling Experiment When Personally Applied. And I can't read the whole thing, but he's walking down the street in his town and he sees a bum with a sign that says, Vote Obama, I need the money. Then he goes to a restaurant. He has lunch. And the waiter has an Obama pin on him. So after he finishes lunch, he says he's not going to give the $10 tip to the waiter. He said that when the check finally came, I decided not to tip my waiter and explained to him that I was going to implement the practical application of Obama's redistribution of wealth concept as my own personal socialistic experiment. He stood there in stoic disbelief as I explained to him that I was going to redistribute his rightfully earned $10 tip to someone who I deem more indeed need, a homeless fellow standing a few blocks north in front of the restaurant. The waiter stammered a few, but why practice on me? I'm just a local college student. And then angrily stormed away from the table in a steaming huff of progressive, self-righteous indignation. Apparently, after experiencing firsthand the application of such socialistic governance from the perspective of the rightful wage earner, my young liberal-minded waiter was quickly convinced that income redistribution was much easier to support as a noble, magnanimous social policy than when his own hard-earned income was about to be redistributed against his will to another I deem more needy. So he went outside. He gives the homeless guy a $10 bill, and he says, go to the restaurant and thank the waiter there who was wearing the Obama 08 tie, because I decided that you, the homeless guy, could use the money more than my waiter who had actually earned the $10. He said the homeless guy smiles in grateful disbelief, tossed his sign in the hedge, and promptly bounded for the liquor store across the street. And then he goes home and he says, I began thinking about the heavy burden of corporate ownership because he wants to redistribute wealth. And he started to think about this whole concept. So he says, I began thinking about the heavy burden of corporate ownership and the endless frustration from beating my head against the wall of increasing bureaucracy year after year. I also thought of the majority of this year's hard-earned profits that I had planned to reinvest in a few new employees, annual raises to reward loyalty and hard work, Christmas bonuses for extraordinary effort, and year-end corporate donations to the Aquarium, Coastal Conservation League, and the Historic Charleston Foundation. After reconsidering my apparent politically incorrect capitalistic beliefs, the needs of my hardworking, albeit financially struggling middle-class staff, and the six-figure salaries of three nonprofits directors sitting in the big, stately, well-maintained buildings that each called home, I decided then and there to give every last penny of this year's profit directly to Charleston's homeless shelter, lay off all my staff, close our company, retire early, and depend upon the largesse of Obama's promised redistribution of wealth for my every need. In that brief instance, I too became a practicing socialist. It's by Lee Walton, Shrimp and Grits. It should be up on michaelsavage.com. Now, you may say it is satire. Guess what? It's satire now, but there are millions of gentlemen and ladies like him who will sell their businesses, they will stop working, and they will let the government take care of you, and millions of jobs will be lost because people are not going to take the trouble to invest their money and take risks to build businesses. Now, this is hard for you people who don't have a business, who are working for a business or a government, to understand. But the engine of our civilization, meaning our society, rather, the engine of our society is the small business. Small businesses are not given to anyone. They are created through an idea and through guts and through savings and through extremely hard work. Now, who in the world is going to take all this time and take all this risk in a socialist economy? What's going to happen is you're going to have a meltdown of our economy if we elect a socialist to the presidency. Do you understand that? San Diego, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm calling in response to your book. I just love it. The morals of the stories go much deeper once it's read the second time, particularly the first story about not discarding something immediately and actually fixing something and reusing it in our society nowadays of how we purchase items and throw them away.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about the electric blue saddle-stitched pants, story number one in Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories. And I want to thank you for that. Stay on the line, Mike, because I'm sending you a free Christmas gift, an early Christmas gift for you to give to your favorite socialist friend in San Diego, a copy of Psychological Nudity. And so let me say this. Yeah, everybody pretends to have grown up frugal and poor, like Al Gore showed pictures of him and Tipper in a trailer, which is just a scream. Obama claims to have been poor, but he, unlike me, benefited from affirmative action while I suffered from affirmative action. You see, Obama and I are on the opposite sides of the political spectrum, as you can well imagine. While he benefited from affirmative action, stepping over more qualified white men, I actually lost as a result of affirmative action many times in my life, although I'd get near hundreds on certain exams. They put me at the back of the bus because they said, the ACLU said, certain people will have to put their futures on hold in order to let others advance. And take a look at where we are today. We have America's first affirmative action candidate about to become president. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is America hates lawyers. Let's start with that. They hate lawyers. Hate them. They're the most despised profession of all. And the McCain campaign has not once said, Obama is a lawyer. Do you really want a lawyer for president? Why? Because the trial lawyers probably smeared off the McCain campaign. You know, they're probably 90% behind Obama because that's who supports the Democrats always, the gonips in sharkskin suits, if they still wear them. Maybe they're still wearing their father's sharkskin suits. I don't know what they wear today. I avoid them like I do poison sumac. But the fact of the matter is trial lawyers are the lowest of the low. Everyone hates them. And here's Obama, not only a lawyer, but a so-called law professor. A law professor in love with Karl Marx's dictums. And McCain doesn't exploit this. There's the detestation for lawyers. They have mismanaged virtually every aspect of their campaign. And there's nothing I can do for them other than to endorse the poor old fool. I mean, what else can I do about it? Everyone says the same thing to me. How could the Republicans have put forward this guy? How? How could they have made George Bush president for 8 years? You know, how? WTNT, Silvana, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, my mother is a stubborn Sicilian, and she has actually called your show in the past. She's Josephine from Boston, and she's such a hard-headed woman that she's told all of us kids that she's voting for Obama next Tuesday, which is something that I just cannot comprehend because she's a Catholic, and she was a young girl in the 40s. Under Mussolini. She came to the States in 1956. I have no idea how to talk her out of this, except...
Oh, wait a minute. You answered your own question. Did she like Mussolini or detest him?
She was a young girl back then, and from what she heard from her parents, he was a fair dictator.
There you go. Tell her this. If she liked Mussolini, she's going to love Obama.
Well, it's very hard for us to deal with this.
But did you understand what I just said?
We do, and I'm glad that you said it that way.
Say it to her. If you liked Mussolini, you're going to love Obama because he's the same philosophy. He has the same philosophy as Mussolini. Didactic, autocratic dictator, period, end of story. Now, if America is ready for a dictatorship, then John McCain ought to ask them that, and he ought to say to them, you know, if you're ready for a dictatorship, then why don't you let me know in this country and left my health behind in Vietnam? I fought so this country would be free. And I am shocked that you're going to elect my competitor who reflects the very same philosophy that we fought against in Vietnam. I haven't heard those words. Thanks for the call. But, you know, there's not a real disconnect between older people of many generations and their love for Obama. What they don't understand is that this man is not a mainstream Democrat. This man is not FDR. This man is not FDR. This man is not JFK. This man is closer to something that we've never seen in American politics. They don't understand that. The Democrats are so clever at pushing forward this myth, this harlequin. And, you know, my phrase, my description of him as a harlequin is as close as it comes, I think, to saying what I think of the man. I believe he's a harlequin. It's not really a, you know, what does it mean? It's not a negative stereotype in a way. Harlequin has a meaning. In some cases, a harlequin can be a positive thing. In other cases, a harlequin can be a negative thing. It depends upon where he stands on so many of our freedoms. So let's go down the list of freedoms that I think this harlequin will attempt to curtail or control. Let us say the freedom of speech. He's already on record saying he does not believe in freedom of speech, that he wants to stop conservative talk radio. So he's against freedom of speech. Number two, freedom to bear arms. 5-4, Supreme Court. There were still four liberal wackos who want to turn us into a Cambodia, who said, no, you don't have a right to defend yourself with a firearm. That could change rapidly under this Harlequin. So the freedom to bear arms will be taken away under the Harlequin Obama. I mean, I'll go down the list. You want about the freedom to vote? Are you telling me there's freedom to vote in this country when there are more registered voters in Mississippi than there are adult residents of the state? The Democrats are registering goldfish. And while they're conducting outright voter fraud, they're screaming race, 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 racism, racism, racism. They know how the game is played, is to steal, steal, steal votes by inserting voter fraud, fraudulent voters rather, and scream that the poor minorities are being denied access to the polls, that we need a poll in everyone's house. We need a poll in every gin mill. We need a poll in every toilet. We need a poll in every village. We need a poll everywhere. In fact, we need a poll near the barber pole. In fact, every barber shop should become a polling place. Otherwise, it's considered racism. This is the Savage Nation. I'm not in a panic. I mean, they don't frighten me at all, these leftists. I detest them. I'm not frightened by them. And people say, why aren't you frightened? I said, because we still live in a nation of laws. They may try their little shenanigans, and they may or may not succeed in certain ways. But by and large, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be the slowly boiling frog analogy. We'll have plenty of time to try to control them. Then, of course, the Republicans are going to start acting real conservative if he starts doing that. You'll wait and see. Why do you see all these frauds, these country club check pants frauds in the Republican Party start pretending that they care about immigration, guns, language, borders? You wait and see. Wait until you see the false Republicans start popping up. But as I said to you, and my future is at this point undecided. I have a few options, one of which is to create a third party. Another one is I'll just be – the third is to continue exactly what I'm doing. And so I'm not sure what I really want to do. All I want to do is offer this show to you at 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to my website. From the bottom up, raw broccoli, best for anti-cancer potential. I know you're saying, what, is he kidding? Yeah, I'm not throwing away my 25 years in the alternative health professions. And I put a health article up as often as I can. That makes sense on michaelsavage.com. A new article came out on raw broccoli being best for anti-cancer potential because the cooked compounds, the cooked broccoli removes some of the most protective compounds.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
The victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court. I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical.
Well, there it is. That's B.O., Barack Hussein Obama, stripped bare of his public persona, the real Barack Hussein Obama, who has not yet denied that he said this because he can't. It's an interview from WBEZ from 2001 when he was who he is, which is a radical left-wing college professor who espouses communism, who is saying that the U.S. Constitution itself reflects a blind spot of the founding fathers. Now, he is an arrogant kid, Barack Hussein Obama, who was given everything through affirmative action and the sacrifices of his white grandmother, who has a nerve to say that he knows more than the founding fathers of the United States of America. And the miracle here, the miracle for you left-wing communists is that you are almost about to take over a country. This has been your dream for well over 50 years, and you are on the precipice of taking over the reins of the United States of America through sheer genius and through the sheer failure of the Republican Party to offer an alternative. I want to read you an email on the Savage Nation that I received from a listener who will remain anonymous, because this represents the gestalt of my audience. When I said to one of my listeners in an email that the question will become whether or not the wealthy wing of the Democrat Party, i.e. Pelosi and that gang, can control the communist wing of the Democrat Party after the communist wing wins, here is what this listener sent back. The listener wrote, "The wealthy wing of the Democrat Party will lose. Clinton lost. It is over. Barney Frank is a maniac like him. And how many more right behind him? Gays, lesbians, and Black Panthers united to take down the system. Now add in tens of millions of new poor immigrants who want everything free to get even with the evil white male. You will have drugs legalized, prostitution legalized, borders torn open, homosexuals in the military, free speech gone, hate crimes laws, higher taxes, guns seized, youth continuing to be drugged, free everything for everyone, you name it, all coming and coming literally in the next 4 years if Barack Hussein Obama wins. The imprisonment of political opponents like in Venezuela will not occur yet, not with the current Supreme Court. McCain is an old man who cannot speak about any of this. The losers who write for the newspapers and work on television are pushing Obama even as their own businesses burn to the ground in failure. They do not care. They do not care. They do not care. This is all sad and all true. Obama is so dangerous," writes the listener, "and the white liberals are the exact types that will put him in office. The 10% of swing whites that should be voting for McCain but are guilty, drugged out, will be putting their grandchildren into economic and social slavery. And all the white male gays who hate themselves and who will vote for a black man that hates white people. It is so depressing." Now, that's the story that I'm getting. Obama is not a socialist. This is the problem. I was the first one in the major media to start talking about socialism when they were still up to liberalism. Remember, I wrote the book. I wrote the book Liberalism is a Mental Disorder years ago. And then soon thereafter, many people, you know, caught it, and they were into the whole liberal, and it started to lose its meaning. I had to redefine for you and my audience what we were talking about. We're not talking about liberals. We're talking about socialists. There's a whole spectrum of the left wing, just as there's an entire spectrum of the right wing. I am a moderate conservative, but I've been painted as an extremist by the scum on the left. The fact of the matter is, when I began in radio in 1994, in the first week on radio, I said pointedly that there must be a firewall between conservatism and extreme racism on the right. And I've never crossed that firewall. There is a firewall on the left wing as well that has been breached. That firewall has been breached by the communist wing of the Democrat Party, whose leader is Barack Hussein Obama. Obama is an artful at hiding his true beliefs that you don't even know the danger you are in. As I walk around, as I ride around, as I talk around, and as I look around, I see drugged up lunatics, mainly white people, who don't even know the danger they are in. They have no idea the danger they're in. They have no idea what their children's lives are going to become like in a new communist America. The United Soviet States of America. The United Soviet States of America. The United Soviet States of America. The problem here is that we have a perfect storm that has occurred. And the little ship of state is facing a tidal wave that I do not think it can climb. You have an old man at the helm of the ship of state called McCain. And God bless this old Navy pilot. God bless him. He's gunning his engines as fast as he can. But the little ship of freedom cannot climb that wave of socialism that is about to turn that boat upside down. That is what I said. And the problem is the perfect political storm. Now, what is this perfect political storm? A charismatic communist, Barack Obama. A complicit media, the socialist media. And a Republican candidate who just can't get into third gear. The problem is because the Republicans chose to pull Romney out of the driver's seat. They did it, make no mistake about it. There's no question that if it was Romney versus Obama at this point, Romney would be ahead 10 to 15 points. Romney is a self-made businessman, telegenic, great family, great story, could pull the country out of the recession. At least people would go for him rather than this big-eared Marxist from Chicago who espouses naked communism and gets away with it because the media is on his side. But the reason the Republican bigwigs pulled Romney out of the line of fire is because they sacked the Treasury. They took their balloon payments. They busted out the sporting goods store called the U.S. Treasury. And they understood that they're going to throw this busted economy into the hands of the next president. They certainly don't want to take the fall for what they've done. And so they said to Romney, pull out, let the old man take the flak, let him take the heat, and he'll lose. He'll lose. Obama will win. He'll overreach. The country will react to the redistribution of wealth. They'll react to all of the social extremism that is coming under Obama, and they'll be clamoring in 4 short years for a Republican again, and that will be you, Mr. Romney. So they're, in essence, putting Romney on the bench for the next election. That's Michael Savage's interpretation of the third part of the perfect storm that is going to launch the first communist revolution in the United States of America. That's one man's opinion. That is one man's opinion. What is your opinion? Chicago, Illinois, Akbar, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, wanted to tell you, first of all, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and I thoroughly enjoy listening to you. Though I do disagree with you on a lot of points, but I enjoy listening to you. I enjoy the Bronx accent. I'm from the Bronx myself. But you know, sticking to the topic, you guys seem to be very petrified of the idea that Barack Obama is going to be president of the United States in a few, you know, about a week now. And I'm a big supporter of Obama. I wasn't a supporter of any president before he began to run, and he kind of, you know, just kind of came on the scene. But like myself, a lot of people were ready for a change, and Obama represents a change in a positive direction. And
we know he represents a change, but taking from those who have and giving it to those who do not against their will is against the American system. Now, of course, if you want to live in Venezuela or Cuba, that's what you're going to have. And I think that if I were a have-not, I might be in favor of a communist takeover as well. You understand, though, that it's a change in the direction of this country forever. And that although today you may think you're going to benefit from it, in the long run, no one benefits from a tyrannical system because you will also lose. You don't understand that yet.
But, I mean, as opposed to taking from the poor and giving to the rich, which is what, you know, the rich get the breaks and the poor, we pretty much suffer. So Obama is proposing to do the opposite.
Well, I understand. It's a perfect storm. You have the Bush gangsters who melted down Wall Street. You have a Republican campaigner who's not really running a very good campaign. And then you have a charismatic Obama who's hiding his Marxist roots and philosophies. But make no mistake about it, no man benefits from a totalitarian system. A man like you, Akbar, might cheer the arrival of an Obama, but in short time, you will find out that your life is also constrained by the new socialist/communist system. You will not have freedom of speech. If at any point you were to say, wait a minute, that's wrong, you would be pointed out by your neighbors. You might disappear and go into a work camp. This is what has gone on in the Soviet Union. It's gone on in Castro's Cuba. It went on in Pol Pot's Cambodia. And you say, that's too far-fetched. It can't happen here. Well, I would say that if Obama could get this far, even though he's a naked Marxist, it could happen here, Akbar. You're not alone, though. You're not alone in that millions of white liberals who themselves have money are literally throwing themselves at the feet of this man, digging their own graves, but they don't understand it. Thanks for the call. I saw an interesting bumper sticker in Marin County, California, that should have been given out a month ago, but unfortunately the McCain campaign is inept. And it said very simply, liberty versus slavery. No, liberty versus socialism. McCain versus Obama. That's it. That's the whole story. Liberty versus socialism. That's it. That's the whole story. You know, Obama himself is probably a nice person. I want to reiterate that. I've studied this carefully. I think I can read people. I don't think there's a mean bone in this guy's body. He's ambitious. He's ruthless, but not a murderer, not a killer, not a vicious guy. But I want to remind you that Pol Pot was a professor in Cambodia, just a mild-mannered professor along the lines of Obama, who went to Paris to the Sorbonne, and he was infected with the Marxist dialogue, the doctrine of Karl Marx. He studied Marxism. He became a student of Marxism in Paris, Pol Pot. And then he went back to his country called Cambodia. And he himself didn't kill anybody, of course. The intellectuals never do. But he hired gangs of young students who wore red scarves called the Khmer Rouge. And these red-scarved youth brigades in Cambodia started to take off the streets anyone who wore glasses. Anyone who wore eyeglasses was considered a counter-revolutionary. Teachers, doctors, lawyers, social workers, accountants, web designers. If you wore glasses, the idiotic 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old AK-47 carrying youth of Cambodia saw you as a potential to overthrow the communist regime of Pol Pot. They at first put you into a work camp, and that resulted in a mountain of human skulls, 2 million estimated, in a country of, I don't think there were more than 15 million. 2 million of the population were killed by the Khmer Rouge, and not one of them was killed by the nice intellectual Pol Pot. No, you see, it's not Obama who you have to fear. It is the killers around him. That's what's coming. Now, the fact of the matter is, it's not over yet. Even this inept old man, McCain, could win. And I have heard from enough people to say to you, for example, I went into a sushi place in San Francisco last week, takeout, and the couple, I believe, are from the Philippines. And I think they're diehard Republicans. I don't really know. They're just like me in the show. And they said to me, well, what do you think? Who's going to win? I said, I don't know. It's pretty bad. Looks pretty bad. It looks like Obama's ahead. He said to me, well, remember, Bush was down 14 points 2 weeks before the election in 04. I said, yeah, that's true. Republicans and conservatives tend not to answer pollsters, while liberals are the pollsters, and liberals love polls, and that's a possibility. Savage. I'm a trained scientist, and I'm very observant, and I have been all my life. I used to watch ants when I was a child with a little magnifying glass. I'd like to watch ants march in a line. I used to like to watch them walk on a sidewalk. I used to take a rose and look inside the rose. I would take watches apart. I've always liked to deconstruct things, if you want to put it in modern vernacular. And over the weekend, I deconstructed a loaf of bread for you. And I was shocked to find out that one of the ingredients being used in bread in the United States of America today is an additive I had never heard of called ADA, azo dicarbonamide. I said, what the heck is this? The bread has enriched bleached white flour. I know about that. Folic acid, L-cysteine, enzymes, ascorbic acid. That's all. There's all vitamins. And then I see azo dicarbonamide, ADA. I said, I've never heard of that. When did they start introducing this to breads, ADA? So I go research this ingredient that's now being added to bread, really an additive, and I'm shocked to learn the following. This is what's happened under George Bush. And this may be responsible. Watch how I take it back to politics. You know there's an asthma outbreak in America, they say, right? Listen to this. It's used as a food additive, as a flour bleaching agent, an improving agent. Okay? The use of ADA. The use of ADA, azo dicarbonamide, in bread as a food additive is banned in Australia and in Europe. Now listen to this. In Singapore, the use of ADA in bread can result in up to 15 years imprisonment and a fine of $450,000. Yet George Bush permits the use of ADA in breads in America. You say, how could this be going on? Because lobbyists from the flour industry gave enough money to the Republicans to eliminate FDA laws, which would have prohibited the use of such an additive years ago. So you say, well, big deal. Oh, yeah, big deal? Listen to this. In the United Kingdom, the Health and Safety Executive has identified ADA as a respiratory sensitizer, a possible cause of asthma. And it also said, here it comes now for those of you who have children with asthma, ADA may cause an allergic reaction in those sensitive to other AZO compounds such as food dyes. So in other words, if your child's taking in food dyes and they're eating bread with ADA in it, they could have an allergic reaction. It says the consumption of this food additive, ADA, may also heighten an allergic reaction to other ingredients in the food, yet we permit it in America in breads and pastries. Well, the shocking part here is that if this additive is found in Singapore, the use of it can result in up to 15 years imprisonment. It is banned in Europe. It is banned in Australia. It is used in flour to make the flour change somehow as a flour kind of, I guess it makes the flour rise and preserves it longer. Listen to what I just said to you. Now, why am I bringing up a food additive on the show today? Because I'm a keen observer. I'm a trained observer. And I can see contaminants when they appear. And I have fought against contaminants all of my adult life. I have fought against the drugging of our children all of my life, my adult life. I have fought against the misdiagnosis of adults and the drugging of our adult population all of my adult life. And I am telling you that Barack Hussein Obama is an anomaly. He is a dangerous additive to the American bread politic. This man is a danger to the survival of this country. Now, why do I say it? Is he himself dangerous? Yeah, he is very dangerous. He surrounded himself with radicals who wanted to take over the government. They killed police. Some of them went to jail for killing police. Some of them went to prison for sending guns to kill police. Some of them said they'd like to kill 25 million capitalists who will not change to socialists. He is a certifiable socialist of probably the most extreme variety, bordering, if not outright, on the communist. He himself is so egomaniacal because he has never had anyone say no to him, because he's always been the promised one, the multiracial child who white people bow down to out of the liberal syndrome that we've seen over the last 30 years. Of any person of color, they cater to, they bow down to. You know what the white liberal's about. It's nauseating. If I were a man of color, I'd spit in their face, frankly, whether I agree with them or not, because they're pandering to the people. So you get a guy like Obama who's a white guy. Is he a black guy? Is he a white guy? They don't know, but he's multiracial, and he has an exotic name. So through his entire youth, the people cater to him because they don't want to be seen as racist, so they're oversensitive to him. So he's not had any real challenges to his statements, to his philosophies. Now you take this intelligent young man and you put him into the worst of schools, that would be Yale, where his brain is washed by communist professors.
Savage.